Hey, how are you? Great to hear. Yeah, come in. Make yourself comfortable. Like a drink? Sure. There you go. Welcome to the Tech Lounge. Shall we begin?
Welcome to the Tech Lounge with me, Christian Schiller. This episode, I have something a little different again. I cover technology, but it's generally software-based, I suppose, or sort of, I don't know. I don't really know sometimes how to describe these things, but it's not kind of the out there primary industries sort of tech. It's more, I guess, tertiary industries, I suppose. But this episode is the turn of Don Weatherby of RegionX. And RegionX, well, they recover precious metals from end-of-life diesel catalytic converters and use those precious metals for other purposes. And this is a space, well, I've been working on this book on sustainable computing. This is not really related to sustainable computing, but I have been looking back into green technologies in the far wider way. And the precious metals issue is a big one. A lot of the devices we use and are sort of part of the new smart green revolutions are actually hard to come by and often found in places that have questionable work ethics and workers' rights and often found in places that have questionable work ethics and workers' rights. So anything we can do to recover them and reuse them from old systems and things like diesel catalytic converters, which in certain parts of the world are not used anymore, is a great idea. So it's a little bit out of my comfort zone, this interview. I'm not sure if I always ask some of the most insightful questions, but I found it interesting and I hope you will too. But before that interview, let's have a quick word from a sponsor. One of my most popular videos is an old one now on Mermaid, the markup language that lets you create diagrams, flowcharts, and all sorts of other things using a markup language. So you can mix it with Markdown, LaTeX, ASCII doc, etc., etc. It's used in a lot of static sites and documentation, and a lot of people like it because you can basically version images. Mermaid is open source and free, but some of the maintainers behind it have now created a new company called Mermaid Chart that turns Mermaid into a commercial enterprise tool with team features, more visual interface, AI diagrams, infinite canvas, whiteboard, all sorts of other cool features. Now, if you're interested in finding out more, I have a link you can follow to get a discount off a paid plan and, of course, earn a little bit for the show. Head on over to go.christianschiller.com/mermaid chart. Hey, Don, how are you doing?
I'm doing good.
Good. Now, you join me from RegionX. This gets a little bit out of my usual comfort zone for a lot of what I talk about, but is crossing over a lot with some other topics I'm looking into at the moment and is in the kind of sustainability of materials space, I think. So maybe give us a little bit of a quick explanation of what the company is doing.
Sure. So what we do is we take used spent catalytic converters and we extract the precious metal, platinum and palladium, that's used in them. And we extract that so it can be reused in the as its beginning commodity type thing. So
yeah, let's break down two of those things just to unpack maybe some terminology that people may be less familiar with.
Sure.
Firstly, because I feel like I haven't heard the word for a long time, what is a catalytic converter?
So a little bit of history just for you. So catalytic converters came in about the 70s and started with your gasoline engines, and what they were meant to do was to clean the air that comes out of an engine.
Yep.
So those engines naturally sort of emit carbon monoxide and your oxes and soxes, nitrogen oxide, sulfur oxides. And those were the gases that were responsible for smog. So if people of certain age will remember the cities had that big, you know, haze all over it for that. And that's the smog created by the automobiles. So catalytic converters were invented or implemented to reduce the smog. And they've done an incredible job at doing that. And over time, they have been added to more and more classes of vehicles. So almost anything now that has an internal combustion engine, whether it's a vehicle or stationary, are required to have a catalytic converter on them to prevent harmful gases from entering the atmosphere.
Yep. Yeah, I do remember when they came in. Were they the ones that in the early days at least had a slight smell to them? Or was that something else? I can't remember.
I'm not sure. I think that may be the diesels, because the diesels also use what's called DFS, DEF, so which is a urea type-based formula that does it. So
I can't honestly remember. I know there was something. But I remember when catalytic converters were mandated. So, yeah. And so, I mean, how long does one normally last in a car?
For most vehicles, they last the life of a vehicle.
Uh-huh.
They do have, it's like anything, it can fail and they do, some get cleaned and that sort of thing. But on general, they last the life of your vehicle, or as long as your muffler system and those types of things in a car last.
Yep. Okay. And so what, I think you said it already, but just to unpack it to the bare elements, what are you extracting from those used ones again?
Platinum and palladium, the precious metals, platinum and palladium. And so,
what are they used for?
So, what they are is that the way a catalytic converter works is that inside the muffler type structure is a honeycomb. And the honeycomb is usually in gasoline engines, it's made up of ceramic. In diesel engines, it's made up of silicon carbide. And this structure is filled with channels and holes and all that. And coated on the structure is a thin layer of precious metal. And the reason the precious metal is there is that it creates the chemical reaction that converts the harmful gases into the less harmful carbon dioxide and nitrogen. So it's creating the chemical reaction, the place for the chemical reaction to happen.
Yeah. Okay. And I mean, I feel like you hear this a lot on the news at the moment, depending kind of what news you listen to about, you know, these certain substances in mobile phones, for example, that are becoming the subject of maybe proxy wars is the best thing to say. I don't think there's any wars over them yet, but they're certainly being argued over aggressively, shall we say. So what are these two elements being used for? Why are people desperate for recycled substances?
First off, they're primarily used in these industrial applications for the conversion.
Okay.
And that's the current pace. Longer term is that there's expected to be even more growth in these. Because one of the key elements to making a fuel cell, so the fuel cells are the ones that are going to create hydrogen. So how you break down water into the oxygen and hydrogen for hydrogen-fueled energy, you require platinum-palladium anodes in the fuel cell to create the electro reaction to break down water. So future energy is based also needing these platinum and palladium. Current industry needs them for emissions regulations. So that's where they are sitting in the sphere.
And then these materials are, like, they don't get spent, I guess? Or if they are, it's over a very long period of time.
No, when we recover it, it's, I'm going to talk a little chemistry, but I'm not a chemist.
Oh, it's fine. Go for it. Okay.
They're just the base that allows a reaction to happen. So they're not giving up any part of themselves to do the reaction.
Yeah.
They're just sitting there as creating the environment needed to have a reaction to happen. So they remain pure. And what we like to even talk about a little bit for our industry is that unlike a lot of other recycling, sort of the traditional stuff, you know, you have a white piece of paper. Okay, you can recycle that white piece of paper, but it's not going to, in recycling it, it's not coming back as white paper.
Yeah,
it always downgrades. Yeah. White paper becomes brown cardboard, becomes, so it all becomes a lesser product as you're doing most recycling. What we have and where we, the term is a little bit, is we regenerate the product.
Yep.
Because what's used and what we send back is the exact same product that it started from. Yeah. So it's not a recycling, it's a regeneration of the product.
Yeah. Okay. And let's move off of the science briefly. Like how did you get here? What gave you the idea and why? And I mean, imagine it has a reasonably high kind of startup cost. So
our company has been on a little bit of a winding path, and I'll take it back a little bit. Is when I started with the company in 2015, it was your traditional mining exploration company. One of those companies that goes out, buys properties, tries to find resources, tries to dig the holes in the ground to see what's there, to try to find a new place for new resources.
Yeah.
But as we were looking at it, we were going, that wasn't a great economic model. The returns weren't there. And we had the opportunity to move into a technology, a materials processing technology. And the original concept was that this material processing was going to reprocess tailings from gold mines. Because what wasn't economic to recover 100 years ago, new technology allows you to get much smaller pieces of the resource. So that's where we started. And as we were down that path, we came to the attention of different groups. The first group was in e-waste and sort of saying, well, you've got material processing and you're extracting precious metals. Can you do it on e-waste? And so we started down that area and a little bit of success, but not great. And while we were doing that, a large scrap dealer in the US came to us and said, I have access to these diesel catalytic converters and the current streams of recycling don't want them. Can your process recover the precious metals in them? So in 2020, we started in the lab scale and we've built out from that baseline to opening up a commercial plant now to being able to recover the platinum and palladium.
Okay. And when was that?
So we started up the plant in this year.
Okay. And I mean, what's the scale of this? Like, I guess there's, I don't know, millions of cars each year sold going back 30 years. So you've got a fair bit to call upon.
Yeah. So there is, the statistics we've seen is that there's 27 million catalytic converters scrapped every year. And right now, the current recycling is between 30 and 35% of that is recycled. Yeah. So.
Okay. And like, what is the I don't know, the pipeline, the the chain, whatever it is here, like how do you get the bit of a car that you need? Because I would imagine that when a car is scrapped or sold or whatever, lots of bits go to all sorts of different places. So,
That was a critical piece for us to be able to move into this business. Like I said, we were in the e-waste, and the biggest issue with the e-waste side that we were having was on procuring the right stuff at the right pricing. Yeah. And so we only moved down this path because we had a partnership with a major scrap dealer. Yeah. And so he has all the network to facilitate the collection of all these items. And a lot of them, especially in the diesel side, weren't being taken off the scrap vehicle because there wasn't a market for it. And so it's pushing down to them saying, there's value for you to take the time to rip it off the machine, the vehicle before you crush it.
Yeah. Okay. And just to maybe come back to that regenerate part, like is it 100% you regenerate, or is it a little bit lost?
Well, what we bring back is pure. We lose about we're over 95% of the metal that comes in our door. Okay. It goes out the door.
Yeah. And what, say, I don't know, what an average kind of month or year or whatever it may be, but, you know, comparing it to mining this, you know, how many, what are you kind of replacing, I suppose? Is that, like, what's the kind of scale of this and the benefit that it's bringing to not getting it out of the ground?
We get that one a lot, and it's a hard question for us to answer.
For sure.
For the one simple fact is that every single manufacturer has a different amount of precious metals in them.
Yep.
And even different model types in the same car have it. Because as time goes on, the car companies are incentivized to reduce the amount. So they're looking at ways on how they get the flow through it, how they tune their engines to make the different catalytic converters work. And then also whenever they change an engine, it changes what is going through. So our input depends on what feedstocks we're getting. But some just other numbers to sort of a scale is, and why it's also needed, is that there is about 17 million ounces of platinum and palladium used every year.
Okay. Yep.
Only 12 of that comes from mines. And so there's been a running deficit over the last 8 years.
Yeah.
An average of about 256,000 ounces that has been not being supplied. So just for what's currently out there, there needs to be more recycling done. Even before it goes to saying, if fuel cells increase, which have more loading than a catalytic converter, the amount of precious metals is substantially increasing.
Yeah. And do you think you could fill that deficit?
Yeah. Well, not us alone. We'll just say that. But I mean, it's like anything. If there's more demand, you're finding more ways to grab it from the current marketplace. The one part we do know is that counting on increased mining isn't a reality.
No, for sure. And there's a lot of political and geopolitical problems around that too. Just even ignoring the sustainability.
And especially in these ones, that 80% of the mining for these two comes from either Russia or South Africa.
Yeah. Which both have problems.
Both have their issues.
Yeah. It's also sort of a certain poetry in the fact that you're recycling old car parts into new car parts, which is kind of a little bit of a poetry there as well.
Yes.
Or sorry, regenerating. Yeah. Okay. And I feel like there's probably a very long tail with this, but you know, is there a certain point with a product like this or a project like this where you feel like you may do yourself out of business because there's nothing left, or
there is potential, but let's roll back that potential for a second. Is that the day that the last internal combustion engine comes off the line, there's still a 10 to 15 year
for sure
stockpile.
That last day
isn't going to happen anytime soon.
No. Yeah.
All the great talk of vehicle electrification and how quickly it was going to happen isn't happening.
It's waning,
as quickly.
Isn't it? Again, yeah.
And there are. It's like everything. Once you start trying to use it for more and more things outside of that little sweet spot, there's more and more pushback saying, "Oh no, this isn't going to be."
Yeah.
We look at the. Right now, there seems to be three streams of replacement. The hybrid vehicle, which is then going to which is still going to leave us product because it has to have a catalytic converter.
Yeah.
Your battery car, like your Teslas, which are there, but battery ones, they're heavy. They life performance, you know, great for in the city, but you get more rural, get more temperature, they're less so, and grid related items. And then there is the fuel cell, the hydrogen yep. fuel cell baseline, which then requires our product.
And on that, like, have you been looking into any research of regenerating the elements from any of those new destinations as well?
We haven't gone too far down that path yet. One, there isn't enough of them available and won't be available okay. for quite a while type thing.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not having the fuel cells needing to be replaced right away. So we have a long lead time to move into that area when we're looking for it.
Okay. And where are you pulling materials from? Is it just in the North Americas, or are you also getting old vehicles from other parts of the world?
So currently we're mainly based in the Eastern Seaboard of the United States. Our plant has been set up in Eastern Tennessee, because Eastern Tennessee is a great hub point for most of the transportation on the Eastern Seaboard of the U.S. A little example I like to give is that the first hub for FedEx was in Tennessee.
Yep. Okay.
So that just shows you how, so they would have all their planes come in, repackage the stuff, put it on the planes to send out for the next morning.
Yeah.
So just gives you a sense of the logistic linchpin that area is. Our plan for growth is we would then look at sort of another plant on the Western coast, then looking sort of partnerships, licenses to go international.
Yeah. So, but it's US vehicles at the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And are there competitors in this space, or is everything patented?
So we haven't patented what we do.
Okay.
For the reason that we've gone down the trade secret route. A lot of times in the key sauce for us is there's a little bit of chemistry, and then there's a lot of process technology that you have to combine the chemistry and the process to make it successful. And what we found is that the protection the patent gives you in those areas is limited, because you're laying out exactly what you're doing to any competitor. And it's easier to on a process piece and a chemistry piece, it's easy to tweak a couple things to make them a little bit different after you've given a blueprint to somebody else.
Mm. It's always interesting in these kind of good projects as well. It's like, what is your motivation? Is your motivation profit or the greater good? So if other people do it, is that bad? I don't know.
Yeah. And we like to say we build things, we do things on the economic basis, and we're glad that they're doing good for the world. We still have to do returns for our investors.
For sure. Yes.
But we do, we're excited to be in a good space that still offers the chance to do good for our stakeholders too.
Yeah. Yeah. And are you able to say like where the regenerated material has ended up yet? Or ended up anywhere yet? Or
we've sold
you
some.
You sell it.
Into the commodities market type thing. Yeah. You send it to a refiner, and then it's sort of where it actually goes is a whole mixture of places in that.
Do you have to market as something different? Like, can it still be traded in exactly the same way? Or do you have to market as like regenerated?
No, we like to the commodities market, it's no different than any sort of bar of it. It could become investment grade material that sits in a shelf or right back to a manufacturer.
Okay. And so, I mean, it sounds like things are relatively new, and you mentioned some expansion ideas for the future, but what's next on that? I'd imagine with a business like yours, maybe the roadmap is a little longer, but sort of 6 to 12 months. What's some rough plans?
So our rough plans is that we're going to be operating consistently. with our first module, producing consistent outputs and moving. And then with that, being able to expand the current location. We're hoping to go from one module to four modules in the current location to sort of increase our capacity.
Yeah. And I mean, outside of what you do, are there any, is there any other interesting kind of schemes doing a similar principle of reclaiming materials from something old to give them a new life that you think are interesting?
Well, our partner, like the, where we're sitting is that some of this isn't new. It's always been around, and it's been the dirty sort of side of the green thing. Our partner, Davis Recycling, his whole business model is about creating new out of old. It's all about finding the scrap and finding new life for scrap. So a lot of places that were never considered green and were thought were dirty and grimy have always been doing the hard work of collection and repurpose. And that's been always the pieces is that everybody sees the recycling side as this little green thing that you throw it to the corner, but you always forget about the dirty side that is involved in, okay, so you've got this stuff. How do you make it into something else?
Yeah.
What do you do with that?
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny though. I remember going in, it might sound like a tangent. I'm not a car person in the slightest, but I was at a Tesla like service center. And the thing that really hit me about it was there's no smell and very little dirt apart from a bit of like oil and grease. But at the same time, you're right. A lot of the found core parts have come out the earth. They've been in factories. They've been shipped backwards and forwards. You know, the process is still dirty for something that's sustainable.
The talk of the electric car, it's like every piece. Something that you fix in one area also has other consequences around it that now is, you began talking about these rare earths that are required for the batteries. Well, all the dirty part of getting those rare earths has all sprung up because of the clean image of the Tesla.
I know. There is a sad irony with some of this. Yeah, I know. It's that there's... And batteries are a really big problem at the moment. Like, what's the other one? Lithium as well is a really big problem. Yeah. Anyway, let's end on the positive. This is a good idea. This is a good thing. You're regenerating parts from something else that also intended to do a good thing, and you're doing more good things with it. Yeah. And as I was sort of saying to you just as we before we started recording, I've been looking at the sustainability of data centers recently, and one thing that often gets ignored is if you want to have more efficient servers, those are made. The old ones are waste. You know, there's a whole life cycle as well to look at. There's often overlooked. We just sort of think about what they're doing, but those machines got there as well somehow.
Yeah. The whole consumer concept of, well, I let it go out of my house. It's no longer an issue. Well, all that stuff that's being replaced has to have some sort of home.
I think that's a nice sentence to end on. So, Don, thank you very much for your time. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
So that was it. That was our guest today. Thank you very much for joining me in the Tech Lounge. I have been Christian Schiller. If you want to know more about Tech Lounge, head on over to christianschiller.com or please tell your friends about us. It's quiet and cozy in here, but the more listeners, the merrier. You can find more at christianschiller.com/podcast or in the show notes or episode notes, wherever you found this podcast. Thank you very much for joining me, and you're most welcome next time.